Good morning or good afternoon, depending on where you're joining us from today. And welcome to this entry into our webinar series. AI is the top technology grabbing all of the headlines, but there is another technology advancement that is on the horizon that we should start to think about, or maybe already be thinking about, and that is quantum computing. So we will see which one of those it is, as quantum and specifically post-quantum cryptography, so PQC, is our topic for today. And we're bringing some expertise to the session, courtesy of our partner Venari, who focus entirely on this area. So let me introduce my guest for today for our fireside chat. If I can just move the slides on there. So welcome very much to Brian Littlefair, who is joining us today. Brian is a seasoned security expert and has nearly 20 years of experience in information security, former global CISO at Vodafone and Aviva, and since 2018 has advised organizations, including Cylon and Legal & General, and is now the CISO at Venari. So welcome, Brian.
Great, good to be here. Looking forward to the conversation.
Excellent. What a conversation it is going to be. So just before we kick off, and so I will get rid of these slides because we don't need those anymore. But before we kick off, just a bit of housekeeping for everyone that's joined. So there is a Q&A function as part of this webinar. We'll encourage you to make use of that. Ask questions, put myself, put Brian to the test. And if you can't find it or can't see it in your Zoom window, there's three dots that says more, and you should be able to find it under there. As always, we will be recording this session, and our team will share a link to that afterwards, so that you can watch it back, but also share with colleagues that have missed it. And then lastly, before we kick off, we have translated captions available. So if you'd like us translated into another language at the bottom there, please make use of those should you wish to. So let's kick off, not with a question, not with a chat, but let's kick off with some audience participation with a poll. So Rebecca, if we could launch our first poll, please. And that is, what is your level of concern when it comes to PQC, when it comes to quantum computing? So we have a few options there: highly concerned, top priority for the business; highly concerned, but not seen as a priority; moderately concerned, don't see it as an immediate risk; or not concerned about PQC currently. So we'll just give a little bit of time for everybody to think about and select the answer. I can see those answers coming in, and actually some very interesting the way that the bars are moving. So we'll just give that 10 more seconds or so we get a good quorum here. Okay, Rebecca, if you want to close that off, and then we can share the results of the poll. So if you hopefully you can see those on your screen now. And actually, as the votes came in, mostly was at that highly concerned, but not seen as a priority. But actually, that's being seen as a top priority for the business crept up significantly, which I thought was very interesting. And particularly when we've run other sessions like this, and we've run quantum sessions, panel sessions at our Security First conferences. That hasn't always been the case. In fact, actually, many see it as hype rather than threat. But I don't know what your thoughts are on those results, Brian.
Yes, a good spread. I think the key things to draw out is that no one on the call isn't concerned about post-quantum cryptography, right? So they recognize the future requirement and something that's going to come down the pipeline, so start to prepare early. But equally, through clients that we advise, we recognize the highest score there, where people in the know see it as an impending risk, but it's sometimes a challenge to convince the business to take it as a priority. And I think we'll talk a little bit about that later on in the session, yeah?
Yeah, no, I think we'll definitely get into that because I think that is a key point. And actually, do you know what? I was surprised that no one's clicked the not concerned, and maybe that's because they're at a PQC webinar, so they have some interest. But a little bit surprised that we didn't see any of that. So let's kick off into our discussion. What I'll do is I'll pose a question to yourself, Brian, and then we can hopefully get to the point of where we've answered it and given our views. So our first question really is, quantum computing has moved from research labs, actually, it's moved from theoretical, then research labs, and into boardroom discussions. But how much of the current conversation is genuine business risk, and how much of it is pure hype and FUD?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting question, and it kind of relates back to the poll, where the people who are understand the technology, understand PKI, understand encryption and how it works, and then have kept up to pace with the developments in quantum computing, and obviously all of the advisories coming from the national security councils around the world, recognize that this is a risk, and organizations need to start to plan. I think some of the hype and some of the challenge around business engagement comes because we just don't know when Q day is. When is quantum day, when this actually becomes a reality, actually gonna hit us? But we should all be starting to think about the migration challenge, because that's going to be individual to each of our organizations, and that is very real today. So I think the challenge of CISOs, security leaders, or anyone that's tasked with working on quantum computing is to help the business separate that hype and from preparation, because there is going to be hype. There's hype with AI, there's hype with Mythos, there's hype with quantum. So it's really understanding who the experts are, learning from them, reading broadly, understanding, and obviously knowing your own business to qualify when you actually start that preparation journey. We all know that those that attack our organizations from around the world have publicly declared the harvest now, decrypt later. That makes a long life data, from our perspective, a concern. We all have data that's been entrusted to us from our customers, from our clients, from our partners. And they would expect that we've put the right measures in to protect that data. So we see encrypted data stolen as part of attacks all the time. Maybe it can't be decrypted now, but certainly in a post-quantum world, that will absolutely be a reality. And I think we have to factor in the migration journey. That's going to take a significant amount of time, maybe many years for large enterprises. So when that Q day is announced, we know that several countries are, leading the drive in quantum. Everyone wants to get there first for obvious reasons. So when that does come around, you certainly want to be a long way down your migration journey and not just starting to think about it then. So, what I tell the clients that we interact with is, focus on the business impact rather than the specifics around the quantum physics. That's a lot more easy for us to understand. We recognize that, or certainly I recognize, being a past global CISO, managing certificates, PKI, who owns them, who manages them, and what level of ciphers are we running across our internal businesses and with partners in our supply chain, etc. It's not always as understood as it should be. So that's where we want to start to build in that business agility as well. And certainly, if you're part of CNI, a critical sector, telecoms, banking, finance, etc., that planning should already be well underway, because the regulators are already driving that. So, yeah, that's what I'd say to open it up, Richard. What's your views?
Yeah, well, I think the important thing you said a couple of times is PKI, and I think there's probably that there is definitely, as you say, hype. There's hype around everything, but it's intangible as well, which is that challenge. I think bringing it back to basics, we don't have a quantum problem. We've got a cryptography problem, which again is slightly probably easier to understand. But we are going to need to break through that hype to be able to get that buy-in. I think most people hear quantum, and if they're of the right age, they think of Quantum Leap and Al and Ziggy and everybody else.
I remember that.
You've got to make it into something that can be understood. Those you sort of mentioned about the the race to be number one when it comes to quantum. Yeah, we're seeing that in both the private sector, but undoubtedly in the public sector, particularly in other regions that nobody is going to, any security agency is probably not going to announce that they have a viable quantum computer that's available. So you sort of mentioned Q-Day. The questions that I think is there going to be one Q day? Is it multiple Q days as things get as things progress? And the capability of that technology grows. But it's not, and I say, I think you're 100% right that we don't try and all become quantum physicists to try and understand it. But the technology, the rate of change in technology is one thing, but also how it's being used. There was an assumption that it was going to need, obviously quantum computers working qubits rather than bits, and there's an assumption that you're going to need millions of qubits to be able to do to break encryption. I don't think we need to go right back to the beginning to talk about actually what the threat is, because I think that's quite well understood that the threat is there to things like RSA encryption. But we've seen that barrier to entry get lower and lower. That's moving that date closer and closer. You only need to look at the likes of Google and Cloudflare in March this year, I think it was, that both of them moved their need for quantum readiness to 2029, which is not really that far away at all at this stage. So you can see that those organizations are see that as very much a threat and making those changes. And I think the interesting one out of those two is Google. Now the US running a program where they are providing billions to private companies around the development of quantum computing, but one of those trade-offs, or one of the things you have to accept, is you have to share your state, whereas Google has turned that down. So you can see that they're not sharing their information. So it's there's a, there is that kind of smoke and mirrors, or lack of understanding of exactly where everything is, which is creating that level of concern. And going right back to the very beginning, getting that buy-in is how do you translate that without it just being fear-mongering to be realistic, that people that are outside of the field can understand, so that you can actually start making, start figuring out how you're going to approach it.
And I think the Google one's a really interesting story, right? So they're either, as we said, massively advanced, or the opposite end of the spectrum.
Well,
I'd like to think it's somewhere in the middle. But and when you talked about Q Day, it's a really good angle, because I don't think we will get to know when Q Day is, right? It's in no one's advantage to say, oh, we've got a quantum capability and we're going to be able to decrypt, specifically if they're somewhat maliciously inclined and can start to harvest without advertising that. So we see some of the timelines from the physicists in terms of when they think it's plausible to run stable qubits, cooling and heating, or the effectiveness of the cooling to actually run the quantum physics is one of the big challenges that they need to overcome. I think how we frame it internally as a to the board and to the executive is it's just another resilience and risk management program, right? So this could have a very broad impact on the organization. If the encryption is managed to be decrypted fairly easily. So we absolutely have to build that into our risk management program. We have to understand that what it is. And that's the big challenge, is the whole discovery aspect. Because as I said at the beginning, lots of organizations don't truly understand. They might know where their encrypted flows are. They might understand which applications are encrypted by default. But do they actually truly understand, the certificates, the TLS, the PKI, all of those aspects? And we see organizations today still running, deprecated TLS protocols to suppliers. Because, from a SOC perspective, you just see an encrypted traffic flow, and Not many organizations break that flow, inspect the certificate, re-encrypt it, etc., because it introduces latency. So that's where a pitch for Venari, that's where they can really come in and help that discovery aspect. Because without the discovery and the understanding, you can't really kick off the program. So you really have to understand what your cryptographic estate looks like to be able to devise that program and then obviously sell it to the executive of this is something we have to do to, satisfy our resilience requirements. And if you're a regulated entity, it's a lot easier because, most of the regulators are putting plans in place to drive their regulated organizations down this path. A bit more challenging if you're non-regulated, but it's a typical CISO challenge of how you educate the board and the executive on a complex initiative. We've done it recently with AI, and we've done it several other times before. So it's just about shaping that in a language they can understand, right?
Yeah, and you mentioned the the discovery side of it, which is cited as one of the biggest obstacles, and and that starting point as well. So why why is finding and understanding those cryptographic assets across an organization so difficult? What is the how should you be approaching it? What's the challenge and how do you approach it?
Yeah, I just think it's complexity, right? Most organizations, certainly global organizations, have been very acquisitive over the years. So very few organically grow internationally. They'll acquire different organizations. That comes with different technology stacks, which, normally are partially integrated to a level of operations, but rarely is the full technology stack harmonized globally unless there's a driver to do that. So we're operating with different technology stacks within our organizations. And put simply, most organizations simply don't know where all of that cryptography exists. It's not typically part of a CMDB or an asset database. We're more concerned about the configuration, the IP address, the system owner, the platform owner. We have all of that to a degree, but we all know we've struggled over the years with the accuracy of CMDBs, so it's to be expected that we don't currently have that good database of the status of our cryptography. We have a lot of hidden certificates, we have all of our keys, we have our APIs, we have our embedded libraries, etc. All of these play a role and add to the complexity. But then you overlay the challenge around legacy systems, which we'll all carry. We're all heavy users of outsourcing, so we have the third-party software to factor in. So if we're using SaaS or just a generic third-party supplier that's critical to our the services that we deliver to our customers, then they're part of our discovery exercise as well. And a lot of people think, as we've talked about Google already, so clouds and AWS, etc., that they're going to fix that problem. Yes, they're going to fix it for themselves, but if we're running our own applications in their cloud environments, we still remain accountable for addressing the quantum crypto challenge within our applications. So again, it comes down to we have a very complex environment. It's not something that we've historically put a massive amount of focus on. As long as it's got a certificate, as long as it runs, as long as a handshake happens, and hopefully as long as we've removed the deprecated protocols, we've largely thought we're in a good situation. Now, obviously, with the view that the cryptography that most of us will be using today could potentially be exposed, we have to start to drive that program. And it's not around just refreshing the keys once and going, we're done. It's about being able to build that cryptographic agility into your environment because, this won't be a single stage process. This isn't a Y2K where, are the clocks going to tick over, yes or no? But if they do, it's fine. This is going to be a running initiative and programs where we're going to have to frequently refresh our keys a lot more frequent than we currently do today to be able to effectively manage the risk going forward. So I'd say it's an obstacle because of the complexity of our environments, but we're fairly used to that managing complexity as security leaders. But again, it's just going to be another fact-finding exercise to understand what we've got, what we need to do based on the sector and the size and scale of our organization, and how long that's going to take us. So again, another driver to start as quickly as possible, right?
Yeah, no, indeed. Joe, I think the comparison to a CMD, I mean, you show a CMDB that's up to date, and
Yeah, exactly.
you'll see a face of surprise and disbelief, and that's with physical and virtual assets that are out there. But then you're going one layer below in terms of cryptography, and as you say, the size and scale of your organization will dictate that complexity,
Yeah.
and the number of teams, and the cross-departmental, cross-functional effort that is required. We talked at the very start of saying, well, you know, it's getting buy-in from the top. This is a challenge, which actually is important. Talking to different organizations, they're looking at this being a significant investment that they need. So you need that buy-in, but also something that you can't go at alone. There's no CISO in the world that's going to be able to solve this problem entirely on their own. Well, let's take a slight step back, and we've talked about a little bit of the discovery where we start, but it's probably also looking at who is this important for as a business. Only yesterday talking to some of our Canadian colleagues, and they're saying that for them and their customers that they're talking to, they don't see it. It's not a them problem because they're not in finance, for example. Obviously,
Yeah.
finance is an area that's getting a lot of focus. Europol in Europe, there's the consortium of banks, which I forget the right acronym for, so I apologize to all involved, that are focus and leading on this because they see it as the challenge between trust. They see it as the challenge with data being intercepted and manipulated from a if you can't trust your financial transactions. But then who else does that apply to? Because there is that view that it's just not, we're not in finance, so it doesn't really apply to us.
Yep.
So is this a problem every business needs to that applies needs to solve now? Or is there so that's broad brush, or is there more targeted? Should we look at investment to be driven by data sensitivity, the industry, the risk profile?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I think it is, in a way, driven by data sensitivity. But I'd caveat that all organizations, if they want to be able to assure their customers that are happy to entrust them with their data, that they're going to keep it safe and secure, then it's equally a priority for them. But data sensitivity and how long-lived that data is and how long-lived it has to remain confidential is one of the key drivers that's pushing PQC forward at the moment. And hopefully there's several people on the call from a variety of different sectors. So, if you're not in a regulated sector, let's just call it out, it's going to be more of a challenge to convince the business to move this forward. If you are in a regulated sector, as we've already covered, the regulators are driving this forward already because, they mandate the requirement that you retain data for a certain amount of period, obviously for various different reasons, depending on the sector that you're in. But let's look at the health sector, for example. Medical records just don't retire for the lifespan of that individual because they want to be able to go back through the history. That's also very sensitive to the individual. No one wants their, NHS record if you're in the UK or, your other national health service record, whichever country that you're in. And equally, from a finance perspective, your banking data has a long heritage and is maintained over, a significant span of time. So they are the key driving points or the key talking points. So how long-lived is the data that you have to hang on to? If it's going over what the industry experts are saying for when potential Q day happens, then early action is required, absolutely. You need to start to plan for that because that is data that you will have in your organization already. You can start to put action plans in place. And that is where we see from, what we've talked about, financial services, healthcare, government, all of CNI, they should be the lead adopters on this. Absolutely, we see programs kicked off. We have the right executive board sponsorship, they have funding. The executives actually understand it. The discovery has started, But that's about where they're at, right? So organizations, where they're at now, should start to think about the discovery journey, because that is absolutely the critical first step. If you don't understand what you've got, you can't start a program to start the mitigation. You don't know what it's going to cost. You don't know the timeline. So actually understanding all of your, cryptographic flows that are within your organization, what's the status of the encryption from a cipher perspective? Is it compliant? Is it non-compliant? And we've seen, lots of us on the call will follow NIST or ISO. Even the standards now include, controls and recommendations around PQC. So when that starts to happen, you should start to sit up and, pay attention, because it's something that you've got to do. We all sometimes chase NIST maturity scores and those aspects. So not having any plans in place and not driving things forward will be an issue and a challenge. And I also spend a lot of time personally in other roles with, the cyber insurance market. And obviously they want to protect their investments and their revenues as well. So they don't want to see a lot of cyber insurance claims coming in around, decrypted data. So they're going to want to see that you're taking a threat that is known, being publicly talked about, and there's potential steps you can put in place now to start to mitigate that. They'll certainly want to see that being enacted fairly soon as well. Those conversations are already happening. So when does it become a priority? I think it becomes a priority now, but obviously it needs placing carefully in with the current priorities that we're all facing, things like Mythos to, mitigate our long-lived vulnerabilities within our estates. But it's not something that should be shelved and you're not working on it, is fundamentally the question. So.
Yeah, John, it's interesting what you said there about the insurance companies and Francis Gorman, who's a bit of a lead on this for one of our customers that runs a podcast. He had one really. It was a Harvest Now, Litigate Later of that threat that's coming up. So let's jump to our second poll. If you could launch that, please, Rebecca. And Brian, you started talking about the journey. So it'd be good to understand actually, where everyone sits on their journey. So really, where are you on your PQC journey at the moment? Now, if anyone selects that top one, then I'll be pretty impressed, and we'll have a chat afterwards about how you've got there. Really from that range, we can see some of the areas, and then we can get into afterwards. We'll see where everyone is, which say we're I'd be surprised if we're too far up that list. But then we can start looking at the actionable elements that we can start doing, the practical elements after that, Brian. Although I do look at the time, and time flies when you're having fun. So still a few more votes still coming in there. So I'll tell you what, we'll give that just 5 more seconds. Brilliant. If you want to close that off, Rebecca, and share the results for us. So as you can see, no one's in those first two categories. So nobody's got it all sorted, unsurprisingly. But also nobody's identified and migrated high priority cryptographic assets to be PQC ready. But many in those lower bits. But interestingly, and actually compare that to the first poll that we did, that very much looked at what is the level of concern, and seeing it as a board priority, but actually reflect that back into this, and most people haven't started, or they've just started doing a bit of identification and prioritization. So I think it's quite interesting poll results, particularly when you look at the two together.
Yeah, exactly. It's an interesting comparison, isn't it? And most people are at the start of the journey, which is where we'd expect you to be. And the others that are more advanced, perhaps in the regulated sectors, that have been having these conversations with their regulators for some time, right? So.
Yeah, no, indeed. So we'll close that off. Thank you very much, Rebecca. So let's get into the we talk about that roadmap, where people are starting. Let's get into that. I guess I've got two questions that I'm going to just join together here. And one is, what's great is when we get insights from real life experiences. So on the one hand, what I'd be keen to understand is, when you look at organizations that are on the journey, what lessons have we already learned? What have been the pitfalls? And then I'd like to, then like to understand, well, actually, what does good look like? What is a pragmatic approach and roadmap that we should be building?
So for those who are just starting on the journey, some of the common pitfalls and lessons learned that we've seen is the business treating PQC as a technology upgrade rather than a business program. It's very similar to what we say in terms of cyber risk should be treated as a business risk or an enterprise risk rather than a technology risk. And this is very similar. It's going to need a lot of engagement from the business. It's going to need a lot of sponsorship. This isn't just a technology upgrade initiative to change some certificates. It's actually to build that crypto agility into your global processes or local processes. I think, some of the lessons learned, if you ask people that are more down the journey what they would have changed or what they may regret when they've got there, waiting too long, we've already discussed that. Everyone recognizes that, this is an issue or a risk that's coming. So why wait? Kick off that activity and start. Assuming your vendors will solve everything for you, they won't. They're focusing on themselves. It's up to you to obviously manage that cryptographic handshake between your vendors and obviously understanding if they're storing encrypted data on your behalf, what that key management process looks like. Typically, even in cloud environments, large organizations will handle that key exchange process themselves. So again, it's still on your accountability. Ignoring your supply chain, so your third, fourth, nth suppliers, obviously very critical to how we build up our services to our customers. So that is a key thing. And then the executive ownership. So we have to figure out a way, or everyone on the call has to figure out the way how to translate this into you have to be the Babel fish or the Rosetta Stone in the boardroom and executives to actually get them to understand why this is a priority and how we actually move it forward. And then, good results in the poll for people starting to get that cryptographic inventory done. Because as we've said many times on the call, without that inventory, you just can't move forward. It's absolutely what you need to do first. So the
When
second
you
part,
can't fix what you can't see, and
exactly.
you can't prioritize what to fix. I mean, as we said earlier, that there is so much cryptography that's probably not understood, unseen in an organization, and then it's identifying that, tying it together with what is the actual priority. Because not only could you not fix what you can't see, if you can't prioritize it, then you're trying to boil the ocean. And unfortunately, what they'll end up in is probably firstly overwhelming the size of the effort that's needed in the teams to achieve it. So it doesn't even look achievable. But also, are you focusing your efforts on really where, which applications, which systems are most risk? And I suppose the other side is which ones, identifying which ones just have no cryptographic agility that need to be focused on.
Yeah, and that is the thing, right? If there's hardwired crypto into legacy solutions which are vulnerable, then it's part of our legacy estate, how we manage that. But we're starting to see a lot of maturity in, agentic AI allowing us to re-platform and recode those applications. And I've seen a lot of success in large enterprise doing that. Not only does it reduce your legacy estate, but obviously it would fix this issue from a crypto perspective as well. So there's always solutions, but there's going to be a lot of complexity as well. So understanding that complexity early is a good thing rather than later down the path, right? So.
Yeah, well, John, we are running through time at the moment. I want to save some for the Q&A because I can see there's quite a few questions that have dropped in there. Before we jump to that, look, we talked about some of the pitfalls that we've seen and sort of talked around a little bit that roadmap. But if you were building a roadmap and an approach, what does that really need to look like? What does day one right now, if we're only just starting right now, what is that? And then what is day 100, day, whatever. What's that that process?
So I think you have to do the discovery first, as we said. And I'm going to do a pitch for Venari, very simple agent deployment on your network, outside your network as well. to understand all of those encrypted data flows. That will give you a very clear view of your cryptographic footprint within your organization, which are compliant, which are non-compliant to today's standards, so TLS versions, etc. And then where are the focus areas to move forward in a post-quantum world? So getting that understanding is really key. That will create your inventory. Then obviously you've got that inventory, you can do a risk analysis across that, because obviously we're not saying fix everything at the same time. This has to be very similar to a third-party risk management program where we focus on our critical assets. So our crown jewels, whatever you call them in the organization, we're not, it's going to be, a multi-year program, so we have to prioritize. So we do that on risk. So let's classify the critical assets and start there first, including our suppliers. So we absolutely have to engage with them. Defining ownership is often one of the biggest challenges. Who's actually going to own this? And arguably, it shouldn't be the CISO from a mitigation perspective. Obviously, CISO organizations have different constructs. Some are operational, some are governance. But, actually owning the life cycle refresh of a cryptographic certificate would likely be in the operational function, but that needs to be clear. We've all seen incidents, issues, outages with certificates expiring because we just don't know who owned it, who applied for the original certificate, and it hasn't been life cycle managed. So while we're doing that program, we mitigate that and get a full ownership and hopefully a global process running to manage that. Then obviously we have all of the governance across the top to understand where we are, what's the risk position, so we can do all the reporting back up to our highly engaged executives in this initiative. And then, as you say, when you skip forward, you end up in a world where you've got a repeatable process. You know how to cycle the keys. If anything else comes that requires you to do that, you've got that ownership, you've got the processes in place, you've done your pilot programs, you've measured your progress, everything's there to be able to do it. Then you have a very crypto agile organization, then you can do your migrations. And that's massively oversimplified. Behind that is a lot of complexity, a lot of challenge. But in terms of pragmatic steps to go along to get to an effective end goal, they're the five or six things I'd recommend.
Yeah, and it's interesting saying that, that initial scan and discovery, isn't just, the first step is probably, and I'm curious actually how often it's seen that actually, let's put PQC to one side, actually just bringing identifying systems that aren't where they need to be by today's encryption standards and need to be brought up. So, and that's kind of bringing it back to what I said at the start, that, looking this as a cryptography problem, not a quantum problem, because, that already exists and it's just taking it on that that one step further forward. And actually there's other priorities for this, not just that's not just being driven by quantum. We're seeing the certificate life cycle or lifetimes rapidly reducing. So we do need to understand everything so that we can have those so we can renew our certificates on a rapid basis. So that's also driving this. So there are other drivers there that fit in with that making these steps that then allow you to take that very next step overall. And the other thing that I just want to just jump on there that you mentioned, and it is a two-pronged approach. There's fixing the technology, but there's also that future piece, which, yes, there's crypto agility, but this is where procurement needs to come into it. And you mentioned the sort of third party, fourth party, nth party. that needs to also, so that's, it's very much cross-functional. Teams that need to focus on this to make sure that it's not the weakest link that's a third party vendor that isn't actually focused on this and needs to be brought in there, and also looking at existing ones.
Yeah, it's a really good point. I mean, it's this is going to be like similar but very different to GDPR, similar in the ways that we are going to have to update contracts. And again, that takes a lot of time, right? So.
No, indeed. Let's we haven't got too long left really, so let's jump into the Q&A. Just before we do that, if I can just share my screen again, I will do a shameless plug on some upcoming webinars and events. So please use the QR code there to get to our events page. And we have another webinar coming up on the 5th of August. So Beyond the Alert, turning threat intelligence into action with Cyberfire MDR. And we also have a continuation of our Security First conferences in Calgary that will be in October. We have Brussels in November, and we are locking in dates for Barbados. So that'll be rounding out our tour for Security First. So with that, let's jump into the Q&A. And we do have some questions that have come in. Hopefully we've got enough time to get through all of them. There are quite a few. So if we don't answer your question, we will follow up with a written answer as part of our follow-up. So the first bit was statement more than question. So I guess we can comment on this. Discovery is critical, but the hard part is understanding the interconnections between business applications and systems, because you can't plan any migration without understanding dependencies.
Yeah, and we've seen that in the big incidents that have happened to large UK organizations recently, M&S, JLR, etc. When things go wrong, it's very hard to bring back applications, services, and platforms, because those interdependencies aren't truly understood. And we all know, hand on heart, that sometimes architecture is lacking, sometimes documentation is lacking. So yeah, as a statement, I fundamentally agree with it, right? So.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to disagree. I mean, it's always been an issue, is what's connected to what's dependent on what. So just the next question here is, cryptographic discovery sounds simple in theory, but most organizations don't even have the complete visibility of their assets. How realistic is it to expect organizations to build an accurate cryptographic inventory, and where should they start?
Well, I think I answered that in the last one. Again, it's going to be a shameless plug for Venari. Look at their website, look at what they do. It's a it's an outside in, inside out, including all suppliers assessment, and you can build that inventory very, very quickly. And lots of customers are coming that way to get those insights. So have a look at the website.
And I think it's only going to be done by with a tool, unfortunately, that's going to identify those for you. Definitely make life easier when then working with. I look at some other people I speak to in the industry that are leading on these programs. In fact, actually, that's the information they need, so they can go and target the business units to start talking to them about what they need to do, what their approach and process needs to be, particularly for large global organizations, where they have an entire function dedicated to PQC. It's getting buy-in, it's identification. So, it is critically important. The next question we have here is, PQC really a vendor upgrade program, or is it a business transformation challenge that requires organizations to understand where cryptography is protecting their critical assets today?
I think it's definitely the latter. As I said, there's a danger that if you treat it as a technology or vendor update program in isolation, then it's likely to fail. The detail and understanding, as we said on the last question, it has to be a tool, because most of the security tools will detect an encrypted flow and then tell you it's an encrypted flow, but won't really get into the detail. We know, in order to get that encrypted handshake completed, there's a ne negotiation between the sender and receiver in terms of, what should we agree on in terms of TLS or AES or whatever, in terms of, how are we going to handshake and talk to each other. And we see it, day in, day out in, large, small, medium organizations. And that's why I said, you have to be compliant to the deprecated TLS standards today, because, many organizations, we educate them based on the output of the tool that you're actually using deprecated protocols that have been deprecated for 7 years to secure this transmission flow. Did you know? And that's because, they see it as an encrypted tunnel. They don't see the actual version or handshake that the two systems have agreed on. And if you, due to, the last thing that we said, we don't understand the nuances of how applications are constructed and the coding and all of those aspects. Maybe we haven't, mandated that system only negotiates in onto secure protocols, and they're quite happy negotiating on insecure protocols. So We have that issue today in our organizations, and unless you've driven a robust program to detect that today, I'd say if you ran an assessment, you're likely to find that scenario that we see day in, day out in your infrastructure. So not only are we talking about post-quantum cryptography, we're also talking about, fixing the encryption that we have in place today. But it is absolutely about, protecting data, protecting critical assets. We have to treat it as, an enterprise risk that is, to provide our organizational resilience. And it's not an upgrade, it's a new way of working, because, as I say, it's going to be a life cycle process that we're going to have to cycle many times, not a one-off, right?
Yeah, I agree with to both of those kind of elements. I mean, there is going to be a large element of vendor upgrade programs. I mean, if you think about networking hardware, anything that's doing the decryption of RSA and elliptical curve, that they'll have inbuilt application specific integrated circuits that are there for hardware decryption. That aren't automatically going to suddenly be able to take on the role from a PQC perspective. So it ends up being done as software rather than hardware that's going to introduce all those latencies. So, organizations are looking at what is the hardware, particularly along those kind of major chains of that we need to look at replacing so that we have that the ability to not just support it from a, hey, we can have that certificate or that algorithm in place, but can we do that at the scale we need to be able to run our applications and our business? So, I'll tell you what, I'm going to cherry pick a question that's popped in. I think we'll have to answer the others at a later date. So I'm just going to go to the very bottom one here that's just come in. How do we get the discovery done? Build scanners. There'll be many to be built in such case for every use case. The free scanners for some types are available. Are they reliable? How will enterprises handle the issue? Lots of code base, legacy code, configs, certificates. Cryptography was made invisible for that for a purpose. Now exposing them is a first step. What if we don't know what is that invisible?
So absolutely, the discovery can be done fairly easily. As I said, I'm working with Venari. They have a very capable platform that does exactly that. It doesn't look at the data, it looks at the cryptographic handshake between system A, system B, process A, process B, service account A, service account B, whether that's internal to external to internal. All of those handshakes are happening all the time throughout your infrastructure. But as you say, encryption was built to be invisible. And a lot of the security platforms, unless we were breaking that TLS to do inspection for things like DLP and then re-encrypting, we weren't actually looking at what TLS protocol or whatever encryption protocol was being used. Getting that discovery done is, a very easy exercise. The deployment of a scanner on your internal network, maybe a deployment of a scanner on your AWS or cloud environments, wherever you host your systems, whether it's a hybrid, pure cloud, it can very easily be done. Then there's a period of capture, obviously, while the system just watches what's going on from a handshake perspective. And then you get a very clean report that can be linked or translated via your CMDB in terms of machine names, if it exists, or service names, etc. So you can see, oh, look, between us and supplier A, who are fairly critical to us, we have an insecure process even today. So it's definitely not going to be post-quantum ready. That gives you the insights, right? And it's very similar when you deploy a DLP system. You put it in learn mode for a period of time, because if you were to change everything, you'd massively disrupt or even break the business. And it's the same as this. You can't just go out and say, we're just going to refresh all of our certificates across the entire environment, because A, you can only do that to the systems and platforms that you know about. But because the Venari scanner is looking at all traffic flows and all handshakes over the environment, you'll also get to discover the systems that you didn't know about. So getting those insights is absolutely key. And yes, there's a lot of complexity in the question in terms of, how are they going to handle the issue? It's going to be a real challenge. It's going to be a big program and initiative. Yes, there's going to be legacy code that is going to have to be addressed, like recoded, as I said, with agentic. It brings legacy systems and platforms back into play, But from a CISO or security perspective, we're either going to have to get them upgraded, or if they can't be upgraded, then build secure ring fences around them and make sure that there's cryptographic jump boxes to protect the internet or public facing flows. So there's always solutions and things that can be done, but as I keep saying, is without if you don't know it, you can't fix it. So you need to get to that known stage, and only you can do that via discovery, right?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Well, I think that's an excellent note to leave it on. So, Brian, I'm going to say thank you very much for joining us on the webinar today and bringing your expertise and views around PQC. And then, lastly, well, actually, second to last, actually, sorry, I'm going to say thank you to Rebecca, who's been running everything from the background as ever. And then, lastly, thank you to everybody that has joined today. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.